in my mind, even early on, I always imagined that I would be able to help so much and have so much value that the state or the United States would come to me and say, hey, we need your help. We know clearly through the work that you've done through the, I mean, Ron, I can't even put a number on how many thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of cops have taken training and say, the proof is in the pudding, Mr. Bonino. Street cop training has found the best instructors. They are top-notch quality, and you guys have the keys to unlock the doors to what we see as a better, more improved criminal justice system with more professional, knowledgeable, and safe and caring and compassionate police officers. Hey guys, don't forget to check out the Street Cop Training Conference April 23rd through the 28th, 2023 at the Gaylord Opryland Resort and Convention Center. It's going to be a great experience. Five career-changing days. Some of the most profound speakers in the industry. Guest speakers include Rob O'Neill, the guy who killed Bin Laden, Kyle Carpenter, the youngest living Congressional Medal of Honor winner, Fox News host Tommy Lahren, Navy SEAL American War Hero Jason Redman, Sheriff David Clark, Sheriff Mark Lamb, and Sheriff Wayne Ivey. You'll also spend time with all of our Street Cop instructors at this event Monday through Friday. We'll have a great lineup of courses in addition to our great speakers. It will be a week that you will not forget. You'll be thankful you came. You don't want to miss out. Check out streetcop.com on how to register. If you're going to use the room code, make sure you book it from Sunday through Friday. That's what the code's good for, and it's about half the price of the regular rate. But those rooms are running out, so make sure you sign up now. We'll see you there. Hey guys, welcome to this episode of the Street Cop Training Podcast. A very special episode today, as we have two very special guests here through some unspecial occurrences. But I'm glad that they're here, and it's a pleasure to introduce them, who are, I consider to be colleagues of mine, friends, and I'm glad that they're in my corner. Ron Simoncini and Jonathan Cohen, and I'll let them explain who they are and why they're here, but I'll hand it off to whoever wants to take it first.
So thank you, Dennis. So Jonathan and I are here working on a very special project with Dennis that relates to some issues that are going to be hard to believe, particularly when we have a law enforcement office here talking about the imposition of rules by a state agency. We're suffering at that in a way that is, I think, very unique. So Jonathan, give us the background on where we started with this thing and how we got to where we are.
Thanks, Ron. And I appreciate being here. Normally, I'm listening to the Street Cop podcast.
Oh, thanks,
this
man.
Time, I'm actually on, so I'm a little bit starstruck here, even though Dennis is a good friend of mine. But so I've been practicing for about 16 years, and I've represented public entities the entire time. I've represented public employees. I've been involved in constitutional law. I've been involved in matters involving state government. During my entire career, the Office of the State Comptroller, which actually came into existence about 15 years ago, has been one of the most obscure agencies in the entire state government. It's a paper tiger is a word that's sometimes attributed to it. Just something that you don't hear much about. They're not really involved in things.
It's a bureaucracy created to make sure the other bureaucracies aren't wasting money. And that's a juxtaposition right there, right? How do you get this thing when those other people should be paying attention to how they're spending money, and we get the Office of the State Comptroller with the role to go ahead and review those state expenditures?
Right. So the Office of the State Comptroller, if you had to ask most attorneys that practice law the way that I do what it is, if they even know what it is, probably the only thing that they'll know about it is that it's a state agency that's job it is to hold accountable local, county, public agencies, you know, make sure tax dollars aren't misspent, things of that nature. So what does that mean? Normally what they do, they'll come in and audit a school district, make sure that they're not ordering too many computers, something along those lines. So out of nowhere, I guess after things kind of ramped up in COVID and you had the riots and things that were happening and more attention on law enforcement, the Police Accountability Project was created by the acting state comptroller. And it was something unlike anything that had ever existed before in the Office of the State Comptroller. In fact, really in New Jersey, I was talking to Dennis about this. You know, New Jersey, for a state with as many law enforcement officers as we have, with as many municipalities as we have, as many county law enforcement agencies as we have, there really aren't that many. Aside from the Attorney General itself, there really aren't that many checks and balances from the state government, especially as it comes to training. You've got the Police Training Commission. So lo and behold, you've got the Office of the State Comptroller says, oh, we're unveiling the Police Accountability Project.
And sort of they get into that business because in this era of defund the police and all this crazy talk, really, the state decides that it needs to sort of have a platform within that space.
Right. So what do they do? According to their website, I don't think anybody had a clue this was happening, when it was happening. They hire an attorney by the name of Jane Schuster. From reading her background, I hadn't heard of her. She was working at a high-level New York City law firm, Paul Weiss. Then she went to work for the New Jersey Attorney General's office for about 9 years. Apparently, while she was there, she became somehow sophisticated in Fourth Amendment. And she says that she can train police and officers. I don't know, you know, exactly what her background is comprised of. Nevertheless, they put her in charge of the Police Accountability Project. Nobody really knows about that. And then all of a sudden, March of 2023, they issue a press release and they say—
March of 2022.
And they say that Jane Schuster and the Police Accountability Project are going to handle a wide range of things about law enforcement, including but not limited to law enforcement training. And the only agency that exists in New Jersey other than that for law enforcement training is the Police Training Commission, which falls within the Attorney General's office, which really doesn't do that much. So the question then becomes is what exactly are you going to do? You're for the state comptroller, right? The state comptroller checks how money is spent by governmental entities. So there would be no reason, based on that press release, to think if you're street cop training that we need to, you know, somehow reach out to this agency or that this agency may affect us.
So wait, just for context though, Dennis, you're in the police training business for a long time. Had you ever come under any sort of direction from the police training authority or did you ever have any interaction with that body?
So 10 years of doing this in the state of New Jersey, of course, I mean, anytime you do anything in a public manner, most people, if you're doing something good, are going to really appreciate it. And of course, you're always going to have your people who maybe are affected by the change and don't like it of the stuff that you're implementing. We teach an interesting topic, namely Fourth Amendment search and seizure in the state of New Jersey, Article 1, Paragraph 7 under the New Jersey Constitution for essentially what's our Fourth Amendment here. For 10 years, I have been speaking and teaching this to thousands upon thousands of police officers. I'm friends with tens, if not hundreds, of police chiefs and police administrators. I have never once heard of anything coming back to us saying what we taught caused some kind of strife. As a matter of fact, the only thing, and I would take a polygraph on this, that I've ever heard back was, it saved our butts. You showed us how to do it right. Things are better. This happened because of that. There are less internal affairs complaints because we're following a standard. You're showing professionalism. So we're confident when we started going against the grain that like, hey, we know this is true. None of you know this. We need you to know it so you can follow the letter of the law because without us giving you guidance on it, there are constitutional violations, albeit not intentional, not with malicious intentions or malice, but essentially because of not knowing negligence, and there's just been this extreme gap between what the law says and what traditionally has been done.
So given that context, how does the PAP show up in Dennis's life?
Right, and by the way, before I move on from this, what interesting word for me is the last word in PAP, which is project. So that's very undefined. Normally, when the state government sets up something, it's going to be a permanent apparatus.
An agency, an institution, whatever it is, right?
Right. So what does it mean that it's the Police Accountability Project? And they've actually asked, I believe, Mr. Walsh, the acting state comptroller, what's the deadline on this thing? Because it's so vague. If you read their press release from March, you know, they're going to be involved in training. They're going to be involved in improving accountability. All right, so what's your timeline? He won't say. So that's a point I would make. But how did this end up happening? So in May of 2022, Dennis gets a letter via email from Jane Schuster. And she says to him, I want you to provide to me five categories of documents, including basically all of your financial receipts for the entire time that you've been in business, coming from law enforcement officers, which obviously is the majority of people to whom our events are provided. That's one category, which in other words, I want you basically to comb through all of your records and provide them all to me, showing me how much money that you make. That's one of them. And then the other four are all related to a conference that happened back in October of 2021 at a casino in Atlantic City and isn't even part of really the regular programming of what we do. It's not, you know, for instance, the 40, 45 programs for New Jersey police officers that we have every single year. It was a special annual conference, the first annual conference that was being done as sort of a special event. There were different speakers that were there besides just your instructors. So you've got these four requests that, you know, are, if you look at them on the surface, they might seem like they're not concerning, but then you start saying, well, why is this state agency so interested in these things? And then you read what they're interested in. They want an unedited copy of 4 days of video of the conference. Well, why do you want an unedited version, right? There was a broadcast if people wanted to watch it at the time, but they're asking for an unedited version. It's just odd, right? And then they also are asking for all of our course materials. They're asking for the attendees, a list of the attendees. They're asking for our instructors and our instructors' resumes and various things like this. So the question that immediately comes to me as an attorney who's engaged by Street Cop is, why is the state comptroller, who typically, if they're involved at all in municipal government, it's, hey, we're just going to take a sample of 67 towns in Monmouth and Ocean County and figure out how many people got too much money on their sick leave when they retired, or how many people or how many towns don't have the proper, prophylactics to, for instance, stop people from taking too much vacation time or something like that. Now they're literally getting into the core of this business, trying to get deep into one conference. So what's this all about? And that was really the concern. So the first thing I did was I got on the phone and I called Ms. Schuster up. She was pleasant, but the conversation was essentially, hi, my name is Jonathan Cohen. I represent Street Cop Training. I'm just trying to get a little bit of information about this letter that you sent to us requesting all of this information. And she was nice, but I said, what's this all about? Just so I can tell my client, can you at least tell me, are we under investigation? I can't tell you that. I'm not trying to disparage her in any way, but in essence, I wasn't getting any answers from
her. But so we have this one core issue here, though. I think that to put this slightly away from the facts of our case, which are complicated, and when you're litigating anything now for this 9-month period, of course, you're going to run into a lot of these little nuancy legal issues, which are going to be important to this discussion. But at its base, I'm a company that does a lot of work in front of government. I advocate for clients who have property rights issues and other. Under her theory of her being able to look at a Street Cop, she could come to me and say, well, let me see your receipts from people because all of those events that you go to are overseen by police departments or are part of government. The state comptroller's office shouldn't be able to come to my office because I have some government-facing issue and ask me for any record that they want from me. How is what they're asking for Dennis any different than coming to me and saying, well, because you do business with these government agencies or in front of them, I'm entitled to know whatever I want to know about you?
The answer is it wouldn't be different from any obvious way. Same thing were they to go and ask for information from engineers that do business with municipalities and other government entities or architects or unions or even a yoga teacher who teaches on Saturdays at the rec center.
And not to speak of the fact that they have an absolute right to ask the police department for it.
Right. And that's really the issue, which is that historically, the state comptroller's job is to look at the agencies themselves, the governmental agencies. So they are in Trenton, part of the executive branch, and their part of their job is to make sure that the local subdivisions, whether it's a school or a town or a part of a town like a police department, is spending its money wisely. So that's where I think you see this divergence, that now instead of going for the town itself or the local subdivision itself, they're going directly to a private company.
And so, Dennis, now he comes back to you and says, well, they feel like they have a right to know everything about you without giving us a reason. What do you, what's your reaction now?
So luckily enough, I'm familiar with the Fourth Amendment, right? So I'm like, hold on a second. I mean, what you're saying is I'm getting a subpoena, but there's no judge's signature on it, right? We know anything under the Fourth Amendment. We talk about handing over records, but essentially in the Fourth Amendment, it talks about the government being not being able to come into your house and go through your records. I mean, paperwork is one of those things and effects of that. And I'm saying to myself, okay, well, what are we looking into? Why are we looking into it? What's the motivation here? What crime has been committed? And why isn't a judge's signature on this thing? I mean, essentially, any public entity at that course, is there a statute authorizing this? Can even somebody as high as a governor sign a warrant? And the answer is no, you can't have a governor sign a warrant. Governor's not a judicial officer, an officer of the court. So you need a judge's signature for there to be a ability to cross hypothetically into the over the threshold of a doorway of a home or a business to now collect paperwork right. and documentation. And technically, it's got to be a criminal investigation.
And so now you guys are saying, wait a minute, what could this be about and what do you come up with?
Well, there was a reporter from the Washington Post or the Times, something like that, that essentially came in as acting like a friend, ended up being a significant foe. Was able to gain access. Actually, I was going to invite him to actually observe the event because I have nothing to hide, right? There's nothing. I don't know what you could misconstrue about anything that we do. And so there's even been concern in the past of like, oh, what if somebody comes to our classes? Like, so what? There's nothing. As long
well, you've had the Attorney General's office at your classes.
Yeah, they came in and gave it. I don't think they realized they were being recorded. I've got recording of the person who came and ordered that saying, I have no problem with this class. I have no problem with this at all. I think it's actually good. And then actually tried to work with us later on saying, we think we can get everybody to come to this thing. We think it's important. If you would agree to maybe adjust a few things to meet our criteria for the state police, which is fine because I'd rather
which is essentially a recognition that there is a dearth of police training in the state of New Jersey.
Right.
I mean, there was one thing I wanted to mention was just about how the subpoena issue came to happen. And I promised Ron and Dennis that I wasn't going to get too heavy into legalese. I'm just going to talk like a normal human being. But I think it's relevant to show sort of the general theme of overreach by this agency, because what we got on May 27th was not a subpoena. It was a general request for records. They cite to a statute. The statute, you can argue about what it says, but generally it's that they can get records from governmental entities. And then there's a little thing thrown in there that you could also go to private companies like us. And if they do business with governmental entities, that we have to provide prompt access to relevant records. Now, what that means is unclear. So the term relevant is what stood out for me. So relevant to what, right? Relevant to what? The word relevant means nothing on its own without something to point to. So that's why I was talking to Ms. Schuster. I said to her, relevant to what? What's this relevant to? I'm not going to tell you. So we filed a lawsuit, essentially, not trying to be too heavy-handed, but just basically saying, hey, look, Office of State Comptroller doesn't regulate private police training. We don't know what they're doing here. And can you please tell us what relevance that you have? And there was also a Civil Rights Act, which we might get into later. But it was after we filed that lawsuit, and I'm in contact with the Attorney General. So if people who don't know, the Office of the Attorney General, in addition to having law enforcement component, it's the biggest law firm in the state, essentially. There's about 600 attorneys there, and they represent all aspects of state government. So after I file the lawsuit, I'm in touch with numerous deputies, attorney general, et cetera, and they're on the phone with me. They know how to reach me. They know how to call me. They know I'm representing Dennis Bonino and Street Cop Training. So if you're going to serve a subpoena, call me and say to me, hey, Jonathan, listen, we'd like to serve a subpoena. Will you accept service on behalf of Mr. Bonino? And I would have said, sure. And then I would call Dennis and say that they're serving us with a subpoena. Instead, what they do, and I don't understand how you can justify this, they show up at Dennis's house, and fans of the show might know this. Dennis has four kids, right? They show up at his house with people, you know, who are ostensibly law enforcement officers for the state, and they show up at his house where Dennis's wife and four kids live. Now, I don't care if you're retired law enforcement officer or not, you know, anybody is going to be scared when four law enforcement officers show up at your house with a piece of paper. And why would you do that? And then someone has to tell them, hey, look, this isn't the office of Street Cop. Okay, we're there right now in here in East Windsor. This is the office of Street Cop. Go over there and serve the subpoena. So they come here and serve the subpoena. What's on the subpoena? The exact same five requests that were sent on May 27th that formed the basis of the lawsuit. So that whole series of events was just very bizarre. It didn't have to happen that way. It seemed to me...
It's sending a message, though, clearly.
Right. I mean,
they're saying, you're messing with us. You're trying to hold us to a standard that we don't want to live to, and so we're going to mess with you.
Essentially, how dare you have the temerity to question our authority and to sue us? We'll come to your house, wake up your kids and your family and scare them and show you a piece of paper and show
you. And when that sort of stuff happens in other countries, Dennis, what do we say? America doesn't do that, right?
It's wild. It's wild. And, you know, it's interesting. And I'll throw this in here because I have no interest in this being redacted. When they came here, of course, I threw my phone on record because I got on the phone with these guys and I'm like, so I got called from my house. They were outside playing. These investigators show up in these government cars. And I'm like, they're like, there's people here for you. And I'm like, what do you mean there's people there for me? Like, what are you talking about? Like, yeah, there's investigators here at the house looking for you.
And just keep in mind, this is over a conference that took place 8 months before.
Yeah.
In another
it's
city.
It's in the summer. It's in the middle of the summer. In the middle, you know, like in the morning, my kids are out playing in the front lawn. And like, you got all these guys showing up. And they're in a capacity of law enforcement, right? So I said, what are you guys doing there? They go, we got sent here to serve the subpoena. I go, do you know where my office is? He goes, yeah, we know where your office is. I go, well, that's where I'm at. Why don't you come serve it here? So they pulled up. I actually had somebody else who worked here watching me, but I threw the record on in my pocket. And those guys, I still have that recording because I'm not stupid, were apologizing to me. They're like, dude, we know this is we know this is fucked up that they're making us do this. Like, we know this is not right. And but we were told to come to your house. I have the recording. I'm not making that up. And I don't have anything to hide on that. And unfortunately, those guys probably shouldn't have said that. But, you know, because they're like, the state doesn't want anybody doing anything and it's crazy. And I'm like, hey, listen, I understand it's your job. I'm not here because I've been a cop before. I get it, right? Don't shoot the messenger. But you can tell.
But we are training cops here at Street Cop. And what kind of advice would you have given circumstance? Like, would you have said to anybody, well, that's the way that should go?
Well, the one guy said to me, he goes, you know, I called my son. We know who you are. My son said you're a great guy and like you have great training and like everybody's a big fan of yours. And, you know, it's just like, what do you want us to do? This is where we work. And I'm like, all right, dude. You know, like it is what it is. You know, I'm one of you guys too, but like, you know, what do you want me to do? And I'm like, okay. You know, and again, I'm not going verbatim. I haven't listened to the recording in 7 or 8 months, but that was essentially the gist of the conversation that happened in front of the building here on that day. And just to go back, why do I think we ended up in this situation? Because this Washington Post reporter, whatever, Washington Post, Washington Times, whatever he was, essentially eavesdropped without permission, would never relinquish how because we were looking to – he probably recognized we were probably going to try to charge him with theft of service. And he eavesdrops without permission on the entire conference. And when he called me, his agenda was how come Tommy Lahren said vote Republican if you want law enforcement support at your conference? I went, I'm sorry. What are you talking about? He goes, you had a conference with 1,000 cops there. I want to know why this woman at this event – got up, told in front of those police officers and told them, if you want support for police officers, vote Republican. And I said, well, first of all, whatever his name was, I go, that wasn't something that was scripted behind the scenes. Mrs. Lahren was one of the very few people in the world at the time when the police were the bad guys that did not pander or fold and stood her ground in position. Well, I don't agree with everything Miss Lahren says, and I've told her that because I have a relationship with her. I certainly stand by why we had her at our event because what it was is to remind everybody that, hey, this woman had the tenacity and the brass tacks to at least, during a time where it would have been just easy to fold like a cheap chair, stand up and say, you're foolish for not backing the blue. And it's funny how now we've switched around. Now everybody wants to back the police again. But she was there at that time. So I will never in any way denounce my decision to honor her by asking her, one of the very few people in this country who had the tenacity and the chops to stand up for us when we needed it the most. I will never, ever, ever say that. One, I'd never instructed her to say what she said, but she was invited to give her talk. And, you know, honestly, she showed a lot of support. She showed a lot of, and people needed to hear it at that time. So
anybody else giving a commencement address, giving a keynote speech, obviously it's an entertainment moment at a conference, right? We all, and I think, so with 1,000 cops at the conference, do you think all 1,000 cops held the same opinion on any topic? Of course not.
There was actually disagreements. I remember necessarily when guys went up and said, well, you're saying, you know, we should think about Republican, but I think we're Democrat for our contracts and stuff like this. And she actually wasn't like, she was actually having a general conversation with a mic being passed around and people making valid points. And she wasn't being adamant or you know.
But we would never challenge her right to say it or anybody else at the conference from saying what their opinion was in a form that was meant to stimulate conversation. That's separate, Jonathan, from the training that Street Cop does. And isn't that what the PAP should be looking at?
No, I don't even think they should be looking at that, to be honest with you, Ron, because they don't have authority. First of all, if you read the Office of the State Comptroller statute, you will see nothing about police training. You will see nothing about the Police Accountability Project. If you read their regulations, you will see nothing about police training, nothing about the Police Accountability Project. When a state agency wants to do something new, go out into some other area, they generally need to either have the legislature pass a law saying, hey, we want the Office of the State Comptroller to look at police training. Because right now, they don't have that authority. And then once that happens, then they can go and enact regulations. And the great thing about regulations is it lets stakeholders know what's to come.
But so in those regulations, would you ever expect it to say, and by the way, if you hold an opinion about government and how it should be made up, we are not going to let you perform the service?
Well, the fact
and that's something that nobody would ever accept, right? So how do you accept the fact that the agency that's there, no matter how much it's overstepping its current authority, the presumption would be that, well, we don't like what Tommy said, and so therefore, everything that happens under the banner of Street Cop has to come under question? Do we ever do that in any other environment?
It's unconstitutional, obviously. There's a First Amendment right for freedom of speech, freedom of association. So it would be illegal and unlawful and unconstitutional for any state agency to treat differently Street Cop from his competitors or anybody else, or Dennis Bonino from anybody else, because of his association or perceived association with Tommy Lahren. All right. So that's assuming, which is a huge assumption, that the Police Accountability Project has the right to even enter into the field of police training. Okay. If you take that giant leap of faith, there's still a big problem if they're treating us differently or investigating us because of something political that someone had said at a conference. And that gets to the other part of the lawsuit that we filed after May of 2022, when I had this conversation with Ms. Lahren, and I asked her, is Street Cop the target?
Ms. Schuster. Yeah. We all love her, but we can't.
I haven't had the opportunity to speak with her yet.
To get back to the case, I mean, at this point, you still have to deal with this on its face, which is to say, I can't presume that this is about Tommy Lahren's comment. I have to look at this as, what authority does this agency have to actually look at my client? And is there any reasonable justification? And let's just say that Tommy Lahren has nothing to do with it. What is it about the case that would allow them to come and talk to Dennis?
They should have to explain that. And that's something that is the most vexing issue since I've been representing Street Cop in this matter, is that the Office of the State Comptroller, Ms. Schuster, the Police Accountability Project, every representative of that agency refuses to say anything about why they're interested in street cop trainings, records, generally speaking, or the October 2021 conference. So,
and does that leave us vulnerable to somebody saying, well, let me see all their stuff, and after I get a look at all their stuff, I'll figure out what to charge them with?
That's exactly what it is. It's unconstitutional fishing expedition when you do that. When you say, okay, we want to see a whole bunch of records. Why do you want to see them? We don't have to tell you. That lends itself to, well, look at it, and then you'll tell us later.
Well, let's talk about this. I mean, I've got to just jump in here real quick and say, on several opportunities, even in legal on legal formalities, we've said, hey, we'd like to work with you. We'll work with you guys.
They'd be a good source of business, actually, if you think about it.
Well, sure. So we really have nothing to hide, but we fear what the ultimatum is, or what your ulterior motive might be. So on many occasions, on the record, off the record, we're like, hey, look, we'll work with you guys. We have nothing to hide. There's nothing illegal here. We have no issue with anything you want to do, but just tell us why, so we're comfortable moving forward before we say, here is all our stuff, and you find one little thing that you're going to do to try to publicly whatever you're going to do to us as a retribution for somebody writing an article from an extremely liberal newspaper that everybody pretty much distrusts at this point, and a gentleman who reported so unfairly, because I said to him, we were on the phone, 99% of the stuff that happened in this conference was not even spoken of in your article. At all, none of it. Not the us stopping human trafficking, the 32 police officers who were shot in the line of duty were tried to be murdered and then came back and survived. We gave them awards. How to improve leadership. All these wonderful things that went on for 99% of the conference. What you're focusing on is Tommy Lahren saying vote Republican and then criticizing and critiquing Marcus Luttrell, Tim Kennedy, and Dakota Meyer, three Congressional Medal of Honor winners who are war heroes and American figures who they made movies after and books after because they talked about their story, and you're twisting it to make it seem like we are teaching special ops tactics. These were guest speakers that literally are American heroes.
And of course of interest to people who have law enforcement, not just as their job, it's in their
military.
Right. So we interrupted. You're back onto the case where now you know that these guys have no interest in sharing with you what their true interest in street cop is, or divulging it, however you want to look at it. And then you say to them, well, have you done any research on any other police training? And you do that by Oprah.
Right. So we file the lawsuit, and you're allowed to do this, which is New Jersey is what's called a notice pleading state. In other words, you say the basis of your lawsuit, and then you try to prove it later, and you get what's called discovery, meaning you get to get questions, take testimony of the other side. They could do the same thing to you. So we put in our lawsuit, this is because we had Tommy Lahren, and you're treating us differently than other police training providers. So the way that that's typically handled is a state agency or anybody who's being sued comes back and says, no, you're wrong. That's not true. Here's what we're actually doing. They refuse to do that. Instead, they say, you're guessing. That's right, because you won't tell us. But it's a pretty good guess, because as far as we know, we haven't heard of anybody else. And I asked Dennis. Dennis has friends in the community who also do similar types of training.
A lot of friends. I mean, we're significantly sized, if not the largest police training company in the country. And so I made a bunch of phone calls. I can't give you a specific number because I'm being.
And by the way, isn't that a point of pride for us in New Jersey that we are home to a company like yours?
Trying to make things better.
Whose mission is right.
Trying to make things better for everybody. Police, public, faith in the police, comfort, safety, your children, the whole nine. I mean, if you really understood what we do, I think anybody, even people who are not pro-police, would still get behind us because we actually push their agenda as well to right the wrongs and all that. But I reached out to several people, I'm talking a lot, people who do business in this state, and not one person's heard of anything. And, you know, we are prepared to even prove that. And not that there's no collusion on our side of it. We can prove they've never heard anything. You prove that you have, we'll prove that they haven't. And we have the proof. We have the testimony.
So after I talked to Dennis about that, it became clear that the trial court judge in Mercer County seemed like he's not going to force the Office of the State Comptroller to give us any information that would allow us to prove our claims, right? That we're being treated differently, which would be a violation of the constitutional equal protection clause because of perceived political speech or political affiliation from other people who do what we do. So New Jersey has one of the strongest people in other states. You've heard the term FOIA. New Jersey has what's called the Open Public Records Act. It's one of the strongest public records laws in the country. You go to any of the 570 municipalities in New Jersey, and the bane of existence of every clerk is the fact that these Open Public Records Act requests are made, and you really have to comply. You have to comply within 7 business days. You have to do your best to search for the records, to identify the records. So we sent an Open Public Records Act request to the Office of the State Comptroller. We asked for basically the same things that they sent to us. Did you also send them to anybody else? And we received basically a big stone wall, right? We did it, by the way, on the most public way possible. There's a website called Oprah Machine. So on Oprah Machine, if you go on this website, you can make Oprah requests to any governmental entity. And the beauty of this actually is that you can read what the government says back. And it doesn't, so anybody could read the interactions that we had with the state comptroller. When they said, you know, we need more time. Okay, that's public. You could read that. Then they came back and said, oh, I emailed Jonathan Cohen separately. So nobody could read that. So people think when they read that, oh, maybe he emailed Jonathan Cohen, being me, the lawyer, Plosia Cohen LLC. Maybe he emailed me the information regarding what we've been seeking. No, what I got was literally a legal discourse from an individual by the name of Robert Shane, who doubles as the custodian of records for the state comptroller and is also a lawyer there, chief legal enforcer, things like that, fraud officer. And he basically comes back and he says something that I've never heard in 15 or 16 years of doing this, which is that where we refuse to confirm or deny the existence of any records besides what you may already have. So what that essentially means is you may be the only one that we ever sent this to, which is what I think is probably true. But at the same time, if there are other records, contrary to 20 years of Oprah law, we're not even going to tell you how many there are.
Now, what would justify that sort of behavior? Because, you know, transparency in government is something that we've been looking at for a long time. And I think that in New Jersey, we're relatively committed to. What would justify a position that says, I can't tell you who we're investigating. Not only am I going to tell you that, I'm not going to tell you whether we are or not. That allows them to operate in absolute secrecy in my mind.
It's, you know, it's only been used once, to my knowledge, in any reported decision. I can't say that some law division judge somewhere didn't do it, but there's only one decision where that theory was ever permitted to go forward, and that was where a prosecutor, in the case the Bergen County prosecutor, was asked by a newspaper about an unnamed individual because they were trying to protect his privacy, so his name wasn't even used in the court documents. Basically, they said the newspaper wanted information about police activity involving this gentleman or lady. You don't even know, because I think they call the person ABC in the case. And that comes from pre-Oprah law that basically says, hey, look, if you weren't arrested, you weren't convicted, we're not going to invade your privacy by telling people whether or not there were police calls at your house.
But in this instance, you're talking about an agency that trains people publicly. It's not as though Dennis could possibly hide anything that he does in his trainings because people pay for the curriculum and it's available through police departments. So does that follow in this case that they could use that same theory?
There's no way it follows. First of all, there's so many reasons. The state comptroller is not a law enforcement agency, all right? We've established that what it is a watchdog that's supposed to watch over financials for municipalities and school boards, et cetera. So it's not like the Bergen County prosecutor in that regard. Secondly, we're not asking about Dennis. I have the request to Dennis. I have the subpoena to Dennis. What we're asking is what you did with regard to anybody else. So this is what the state comptroller has done this entire case is because in their statute, they have the word investigation, which a lawyer actually admitted on the record, they don't even think it means the same thing for the Office of the State Comptroller that it would mean in a police department or any other setting with which we're familiar. The Attorney General, Assistant Attorney General, actually stated on a record, well, for the State Comptroller, an investigation could be the same as an oversight, review. So we're not even talking the same language here. It's definitely not a criminal investigation, and there's nobody's privacy interests concerned, right? We're talking about a non-law enforcement agency, and you're going to us, and you're asking for documents. So we're just saying, we're trying to find out, did you do that to anybody else? So how is that at all, like, for, you know, the person saying, well, were the police at his house? You know, did they get a 911 call from his wife? It's nothing like that. What I'm trying to find out is, did you send out any other subpoenas? And it got to a point where we even said, when we were before the court, we will take redacted records. If privacy is, you know, there's 150 or so training vendors in New Jersey. If you sent any other subpoenas out, black out everything. Just give me the piece of paper so I know you sent another one. They won't do that.
So Dennis, from your point of view now, you don't have anything that's going on here at Street Cop that you would be embarrassed to make public.
In some weird way, I secretly wish that there could be a conversation where people who are even anti-police would be cool enough and leave their emotions at the door to come in and see what we're doing.
Right, because at its essence, you're teaching cops how to follow the rules.
That's right.
Not how to make their own rules.
Because what's happening now is, unbeknownst to a lot of people, and again, not with malice, people are following their own rules. You got to know what the rules are. And at the very most important core of what we do here is making sure better tactics are employed to protect not only the public, but police. So literally, I have countless, Ron, I'm talking about thousands of them, messages. And some of the most important ones are, I didn't die because of you guys. I would have been dead. I was going to kill myself, but I didn't because of something you said or something I learned in class. I recognized what my value was. I learned coping mechanisms. And for us to sit here and pretend like a police officer's life is any less valuable than anybody else's. As a matter of fact, I would even argue that somebody who's so noble to come out and do this for almost pennies on the dollar might be even more valuable.
But to speak to Jonathan's point, there's no way that you as a business owner here are saying to the state, I don't want to tell you what I do. That's not what this is about.
He invited the
and
state
it's not
in.
About the Murphy administration generally. It's not. It has nothing to do with politics. In a brief sentence, why don't you want to just give up and give in to the request?
We predict that they will find just that one little thing that they need to turn it around and make us look like we are animals. And they, in my opinion, will take, anybody can take anything out of context without providing the front or the back end of it. You could do it with anything you want. And we believe that their intention is to make a statement back to us politically to show what will happen in this state if you ever try to challenge the great power that is, or you ever think that at some kind of event that you have, you can talk in any way, in any regard, badly about a Democratic Party. And I'm well known for not being political.
Right. Well, it'd be hard to be political in a state where most towns are Democratic and most of your business comes from towns.
Yeah.
So how, you'd be slitting your own throat.
You can't find a thing of me.
Take a political point of view.
Matter of fact, let me just say this off record or on record here. One of the biggest accolades I receive is like, we like how you never go political. I get that all the time. From politicians all the way down to regular civilians outside of the law enforcement, we just like that you don't make it political ever. I go, listen, my agenda has nothing to do with politics. My agenda is with making sure cops are safe, making sure the Constitution's followed, and making sure bad guys go where they belong.
So, Jonathan, what happens after they tell you, no, we're going to stick to this idea that we don't have to share any information, we don't have to divulge what we're doing, that we have essentially an almighty power to tell you what we want from you and you're supposed to give it to us? What happens after that?
Well, we exercised our right to file a lawsuit in Mercer County Superior Court under the Open Public Records Act and under the common law right of public access. And the second law, the common law right of public access, takes into consideration your interest, right? And I would say Dennis obviously has an interest in finding out whether he's been targeted as opposed to other people. And we presented that to the judge in Mercer County. And the judge basically had about 10 pages of just reciting the party's positions, and then about one, you know, a few pages with almost no legal analysis whatsoever, just saying that buying into this idea that this non-law enforcement agency has total sanctity to or total license to operate clandestinely and not tell anybody because they're doing what they call an investigation. How do you define the term investigation? They won't tell us that because they define it differently than everybody else. But for them, everything they do apparently is an investigation. So one question that we raised, which the trial court judge refused to answer, is when can anybody get anything of substance from the Office of the State Comptroller for something that they're doing? And as best as I could tell, they can't, because all the Office of the State Comptroller can say under this precedent is, oh, we're doing an investigation. Once they say those magic words, and by the way, they're always going to be sued in Mercer County because that's the county,
where the government is, right?
That's where they are. So as long as the trial judge is this trial judge, presumably he's going to rule the same way every single time. So they essentially they've got, they're the only public entity that I know of in the state of New Jersey that never has to turn over any document of any substance.
So what happens now? You've got a bunch of different appeals and a legal process that we don't want to bore everybody to tears with. But ultimately, what do we face here as a result of this?
Well, we're going to appeal that one to the appellate division. And I think,
is there any case that we don't appeal? We want to make sure that we get through the entire judicial system.
I think this is an important appeal. Even anybody who's involved in news gathering understands this, that for a governmental entity to say that they never have to show you or even admit whether documents exist is a scary precedent. It's totally contrary to what's espoused by the members of the Democratic Party, Loretta Weinberg, who passed the Oprah law. I mean, every single news agency in New Jersey would be shocked to hear that this agency is allowed to simply say, oh, we're doing an investigation, but it's not a criminal investigation, and we don't have to tell you anything. We don't even have to tell you whether documents exist. So we feel pretty good about our chances in terms of appealing that to the appellate division, and at least saying to the appellate division, even if we don't get the documents, please tell this agency that they don't have this unfettered authority whereby they are different from everybody else in terms of they don't have to even admit the existence of documents.
So relative to the various appeals that you have and the various confrontation that you've made in this case, we've had some good news recently.
That's right. Actually, Ron, as it happens during the essentially this podcast, I came to find out that the appellate division has granted a stay, meaning in layman's terms, that Street Cop Training, Dennis Bonino, does not have to turn over the documents that were subpoenaed by the Office of the State Comptroller at this time. And that's going to be in effect until such a time that the Supreme Court has had the opportunity to view our appeal.
And so as bizarre as all this has been and as antithetical to what we would normally think about good process and equal protection, we've got a moment here where something happened that we would have expected to happen. But in this kind of situation, you wonder.
I mean, if the law was truly fair and impartial and the lady with the scales on her one hand, the book under the other, and the blindfold on is truth, then yeah. But you know, we're in this game long enough to know that there's no time to celebrate until it's over. So we're when things like this happen, we say to ourselves, okay, somebody's actually seeing the truth here. We appreciate it. Somebody is seeing that something is not correct here and is at least validating us and our claims. Because Mr. Cohen will explain here, is that it's very simple to deny an appeal request. It's just simple. They just put denied and send it back. So this is the second time that it was not denied. So, and John will tell you, most of the stuff that gets appealed gets denied. Most of it.
So in relative to that, it sort of creates in this world of, you know, real paranoia, which we're entitled to at this point, right? We're doing this podcast because we want people to understand these issues. And as you and I have discussed, what podcast could the other side do? Like, what do you say now? No, we should be able to withhold any information. Like, you couldn't sit here for an hour if you're them and talk about your perspective on the case. What's your perspective now? You've had this decision. You go forward. You look at some things that have happened, like Dennis was noted to be in contempt of court by the opposing attorneys when he's not. Like, what do you expect to happen from here?
Well, as you alluded to, if you read the papers that were filed by the state comptroller, slander and defamation don't exist in the court of law because there's a complete guard on that, because there needs to be freedom to be able to say what you want in a court proceeding.
And be judged on that.
Right. So the Office of State Comptroller did say something that was inaccurate. If they had said it outside of a legal proceeding, it would arguably be libel or defamation, because they actually said that Dennis was in contempt of court, or that street cop training was in contempt of court because they hadn't produced the documents. That's not true. In order to be held in contempt of court, a judge has to adjudicate you in contempt of court, and that simply has not happened in this case.
And now, of course, we have the appellate decision that says you don't have to produce the documents, so you could never be held in contempt of that.
That's right. And just to give you some context on what the appellate division decision means, even though the decision reads one word granted and the other possibility was probably one word denied, the standard for them to grant this motion for a stay is really that they have to find that we have a reasonable likelihood of success on the merits before the New Jersey Supreme Court, that we could prove to the New Jersey Supreme Court that if we turn over these documents, we would suffer irreparable harm, which we've argued would be the constitutional injury of our Fourth Amendment rights, and also a balancing of the harms. So essentially, by the appellate division, and it's the same appellate division panel that previously ruled against us, saying that we met that high bar in order to get a stay, that we don't have to produce documents because the Supreme Court may see things differently. At a minimum, what the appellate division is saying is, in the same manner you convinced us that it's possible that the Office of the State Comptroller overstepped its bounds, we think that the Supreme Court could find the same way. So it's a good turn of events for us. You know, I'm very hopeful. I've appeared before the Supreme Court several times, including this week. I think that that's court of last resort. It's the final bulwark in the New Jersey legal system. And this is really who we're counting on to make sure that we have our rights protected. And nobody knows more about the Constitution in the state of New Jersey than the justices on the New Jersey Supreme Court.
And so from your point of view, I mean, here we are. Maybe it's not a reason to celebrate, but it certainly begins that path of affirmation that says we're having faith in the justice system to work here and protect our rights the way that they should be, when even if it's a well-intended state agency oversteps its bounds, you've got to at least, you know, get that feeling of I'm getting a little momentum here in the right direction, Dennis.
I would appreciate an impartial referee here, and especially somebody who can discredit the claims of the other side, where their attorney or representative was on the record saying that we were playing a stalling game because we were using our appeals process that's in our rights as constitutional citizens of the United States of America. But on their side, they were just saying, you're just trying to prolong the inevitable. And what we argue is, there's appeals in place for a reason.
And we got a great argument here, fellas.
Right. Like, you realize that the system is set up this way to ensure, to the best of the court's ability, that we got it right. Right. And by the way, not every single time they get it. Most of the time they get it right, but not it. So what we're saying to them is, like, what if, and it's not uncommon, Ron. I mean, I read a lot of case law. Not uncommon for something to flip-flop many times. It could be here at the Superior Court level. It could flip on the appellate division level and flip back. It's very, very common. So it's like a 50. It's hard to say because you'd just be essentially grasping for straws to give percentages. But it's common. It's not uncommon to see. And I think that, like Mr. Cohen said, we have to rely on the New Jersey Supreme Court for the most fair interpretation of Article 1, Paragraph 7 or the Fourth Amendment. And then, you know, to allude to Jonathan, it actually isn't the last resort. I guess our next attempt would be maybe a U.S. Supreme Court, which is tough to achieve, but we've been surprised thus far. The interlocutory appeal that was given to us last time is 1 out of 100, maybe 1 out of 200.
And it's because these issues are so central to our value system, I think, right? That we want to, that there would be a closer look at some of these issues at these higher courts to say, are we going to make a decision here that provides an access that maybe we really, certainly the founders didn't intend, right?
Right.
And I think that that's, you know, something that we've got some faith in and you've got some faith in and that we can pretty much rely on going forward here is it's highly beneficial to us that now we've been in front of a number of judges who each can take their own specific and their own interest level on the issues that we're bringing before the courts.
Yeah, I mean, there's something called a de novo review. And what it means is to see with a fresh set of eyes. So what we're asking is, let everybody take a look at it. And if we've trusted these people enough at the highest courts of the state, well, we have to have at the most trust in saying that their judgment, because they were appointed and put into those positions, and again, a lot of all these appellate division superior court judges, they do make it to that higher court. It's very hard to get there. It doesn't mean they're not qualified, but these have been selected through the years to be the most qualified judges. And let's all at least have everybody get a shot at taking a peek at this thing. Because again, if you came back to me and said, hey, they agreed with you guys, I would say, I'm not shocked. You would see no shock in my face. I don't even have a sense of relief because I'm not sitting here on edge. I'm sitting here comfortable knowing that I know we're right. And lawyers and everybody that I know and legal professionals across the board, not one person has said, not one person, even if they don't like us or they have a different position, and I've discussed this with them, none of them has said they're correct. They're always like, everybody that I've met, I'm talking tens, if not dozens of lawyers, have said to me, we agree with you. We don't even like you, and we agree with you. And that says a lot about what this is.
So that's what that appeal is. In terms of the other issues, I mean, yes, we're not going to roll over and have our constitutional rights trampled. What exactly is their motivation here? Because when you read the March 2022 press release and article, and you're trying to figure out what this agency is supposed to do, you might think they're going to improve police officer training going forward, or perhaps improve law enforcement services going forward. But if that's what they want to do, then why?
Well, they should come to us to do that. That's what we do.
Well, why,
Dennis, would you be a collaborator with them on that?
In my mind, even early on, I always imagined that I would be able to help so much and have so much value that the state or the United States would come to me and say, hey, we need your help. We know clearly through the work that you've done through the, I mean, Ron, I can't even put a number on how many thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of cops have taken training and say, the proof is in the pudding, Mr. Bonino. Street cop training has found the best instructors. They are top-notch quality and you guys have the keys to unlock the doors to what we see as a better, more improved criminal justice system with more professional, knowledgeable, and safe, and caring and compassionate police officers. Knowing that, we'd like to sit down and talk with you. And I feel like I deserve that, right? I would think that would be the conversation, especially after my guess is the attorney general who disclosed in my class, the investigators that came out, said that we're here because there was an investigation on behalf of that. But at the end, again, what I suspected would happen, because I was actually excited that they were there, and I have this recorded, this gentleman said to me, I have no problem with the class. I really think it was really good. And then,
but so if they're out to demonize us, Dennis, what's the end game there? Because if they demonize us and they undermine our ability to train cops in New Jersey, and they're not going to do it, what happens?
Check this out. I mean, this is how nuts this is, right? All these cops who had the training to protect your children, to improve on every aspect of law enforcement, to learn compassion, to learn mental health awareness, to learn physical fitness. We're really big advocates of Brazilian jiu-jitsu, a far less dangerous way of controlling people in violent situations. There's none of this. What you get at the end of the day is a continual now progression of more victims, less trained cops, more deaths. And that's not even some kind of pontification of what I predict will happen. I know this will happen because if we're doing it, the work, I'm coming back and getting the reports back that we're stopping this stuff, these violations of law that continue, more lawsuits, more taxpayer money, all these things, because we are the ones here with not sounding narcissistic to say that we've put the thought into this. We know it actually works. And let me have a form to explain to you why this theory versus the one that we're existing in works. So essentially, what does it happen? Everybody suffers. And it may sound crazy to say that. More victims, more taxpayer money, more people, and I say victims, that's the most macro statement. More cops committing suicide, more people losing their lives, more criminals going after everything, including human beings' lives, your children. That sounds like it's like a scare tactic, but I'm telling you it's true. I can prove it.
And at the end of the day, Dennis, you're active in a number of different states. You're not just
almost
here.
Almost
all the states. Yeah. And so your business is going to survive any kind of blackballing that they might try to do for you in New Jersey.
That's right.
But as a New Jerseyan and you're Southern, you know, we're proud New Jerseyans, right?
Oh, yeah.
Through and through, love this state, want this state to succeed. And in a sense, I'm proud of the state government as well. There are these instances where you say to yourself, where are we really going here? What do you think in terms of nationally, what are people going to say when they hear that New Jersey is endeavoring to demonize one of its own who's doing the right thing by street cop? How's the rest of the country going to react to that?
Yeah, I think we're in a state now of affairs that people have had enough of this anti-police rhetoric. You know, it's very interesting to me that everybody wants change, but nobody's implementing any. And sometimes the change that's being implemented is just, again, kind of like a paper tiger. It's this little gesture that does nothing to push the agenda. They'll say things like, we're going to train people on implicit bias. So what do? They do a 50 slide deck slideshow. They get to sit down in front of a computer and hit write, and it has like a 30-second timer on it, and cops just sit there and click it, right? Rather than taking an organization like ours, who has a gentleman by the name of Jeff Scholes, who was a retired New York State trooper who teaches de-escalation, implicit bias, and all these things. And he talks about how to communicate. How do we take these high-intense situations and bring them down to and communication? It's such a powerful and important class. You all want this? We're bringing it to you because we want it too. No cop wants to ever do the wrong thing. They've just been given nothing to work with. Right. So we've shown up and said, if they're not going to do it, we're going to do it. And the world has responded, and we're into 58 countries now. We have people coming from all over the world coming to our conferences to learn. They're having impact in England, in Ireland, in Australia. I mean, all over the place. We're getting people. So if this is what you want, and you want the police to get better, this is so contradictory to what you actually want. You're actually stopping the process you seek to. As long as you give me an opportunity to explain why, I promise you anybody, anti-police, pro-police, will sit down and say, this is exactly what we need.
So, Jonathan, what have we missed in the legal end? I'm sorry I didn't let you be a lawyer as much as you probably would have wanted to in this. Where did we leave off on this, and what's our exposure? And prognosticate out where we go from here from the jurisdictional point of view that we're being vulnerable to.
Well, it's really complex legally, Ron, so I don't want to get too heavy into the weeds. But what I think you guys are hitting the key points, which is, what is the motivation of the Police Accountability Project? What are their teeth? They are not a criminal organization, so there's not criminal sanctions that they can impose against us. There's no reason why anyone would believe that they think that we did anything criminal, okay? So, I get off the legal soapbox for a second and just say, as to what you guys are saying, because it stimulated my thinking, people vote with their feet. Why did street cop training become as successful as it has? Because police chiefs, police captains, police officers have gone to our trainings and determined that they're more valuable than perhaps competitors, that they're getting value from it, that they're learning things that could be saving their lives, saving the lives of others, and therefore they're coming to our programs. So if you are the Police Accountability Project, rather than try to hang Dennis's head on your wall as though he were a bear that you just shot, why not work with him going forward? Instead, you're focusing on an October 2021 seminar. You didn't come into existence as the Police Accountability Project until November of 2021. You didn't announce yourself until March of 2022. So in other words, this happened before you even existed. So why don't you work with us, who the people have chosen, who the law enforcement officers in the state of New Jersey have said, this is a valuable training that we want to go to, where we're learning more about the Fourth Amendment than we can learn in police academy, more about any type of law enforcement activity, how keeping ourselves alive that we can learn from other places. So why are you focused on some seminar that, because you want to write a paper? I mean, that's the only thing that I could get out of it, because ultimately it's ironic in the highest degree that an agency, now I'm going outside of the Police Accountability Project, back to the Office of State Comptroller. What's the purpose of this agency? The purpose of this agency is to save taxpayer dollars. How many taxpayer dollars are they spending trying to trample on Dennis Bonino and street cops' constitutional rights so they could write a paper that they could put on our website and try to convince law enforcement agencies in New Jersey not to hire us because of something that ostensibly could have happened at a conference before the Police Accountability Project was announced? And I want to preface this. These are all guesses because they refuse to tell us what they're investigating.
Right. So let's give them the benefit of the doubt for a second. Let's say they came back and said, well, the only reason that we're looking at the 21 conferences, it's all we know about, and we're trying to figure out what's going on there through an identifiable moment. Now, it's hard to believe that that would be the case when thousands of cops a year in New Jersey get trained by street cop, that that would be the only way for them to learn about what we've been doing. But if we accept it for a moment, that that's what's happening. Even at that, where does the government get off telling us, trust us and tell us everything about you, despite the fact that we're not going to give you a reason? Because as you and I know, and as you and I know, a healthy mistrust of the government is essential to life in America. You can't possibly not challenge what government does here, because that's what government's set up for. Government is set up to represent us and let us challenge what it does. And so that's what we're doing here. So short of wrapping ourselves in the American flag here, is there any other choice that we have, or that Dennis has, except to go forward as we are and stop this as much as we can in its tracks?
We probably wouldn't be where we are, Ron, if they would just give us a reason. And the funny thing is, if I were to give you the transcripts of the various hearings that we've had, Assistant Attorney General, who I actually respect because she, without the help of the Police Accountability Project, is standing there trying to guess what it could be about. You know what her guesses were? One of them was, well, maybe police agencies in New Jersey are ordering too many of the same course. You know, maybe there's too many search and seizure courses. So we just want to find out if that's the case. So they're just guessing. So what I'm saying is, we wouldn't even be here, I think, if they would just say generally what their investigation, assuming it's an investigation, is about. So let's say that they said, we think that something happened at that conference. We could then say, well, that's either a legitimate thing to look into or it's not a legitimate thing to look into. If they were to say, you know, I think honestly the purpose of the state comptroller is to look at government entities. Sometimes you need to go to the private vendors to look at the government entities. You know, for example, let's say that a police officer or a group of police officers reported attending our training, but the police department is conducting an internal affairs investigation. They don't believe that they actually attended our training, or they believe they engaged in some kind of chicanery when they were in Atlantic City. Under those circumstances, it would probably be appropriate for the state comptroller to come to us and say, we'd like to review your records, and it's in conjunction with our investigation of X police department in Monmouth County or Ocean County or Middlesex County or Cumberland County. And if that were the case, I'm sure we would turn over the documents, because it wouldn't be about us. It would be about their statutory function. So really, the underlying issue is their refusal to even say, even in the most general terms imaginable, we're investigating X or Y or Z. And they've said maybe it's police training. They've said, look at what the documents that we're seeking, and that should allow you to guess what we're investigating. So really, that's the constitutional violation. And any police officer knows that if you're going to get a warrant to go to look at somebody's property, you've got to go to a judge and explain to the judge what you're hoping to find. And, you know, the state comptroller, when called out on it repeatedly, refuses to tell the judge, even in the most general terms, what they're looking for. And the fact is, they've gotten away with it up until now. So our hope is that, you know, we're not going to roll over, and that at some point, whether it's the appellate division or even the New Jersey Supreme Court, is going to come out and say, a state agency can't act in this manner. And in fact, I know of no other state agency that would even try. And this state agency is unique because it's in the Department of Treasury, but it doesn't answer to anyone in the Department of Treasury. The acting state comptroller answers directly to Governor Murphy, meaning there's essentially no oversight except for the political figure of the elected governor. So,
well, I've got an enormous amount of respect for him. And I think if Governor Murphy were here right now having this conversation with us, we wouldn't have it for very long because he would work out what the interest of the state is in this organization. And he would be the type of person who'd say to himself, my value system aligns with the idea that these officers are trained well. So, Dennis, as an endpoint, where do you come out on this thing? And what, how long are you willing to support this level of litigation and really go, because it's got to be very expensive. And really, you know, go through this in a sense, not just for yourself, but there are a lot of people, I think, who don't even know that they're relying on you to succeed at this.
I've expressed to a lot of people who asked me that question before that I feel like I'm in a position to make sure that there are no more, quote unquote, victims of the state. And having an opportunity now, having the right attorney who I have complete confidence in, and having you, Ron, now on our team as well. I even expressed this to Jonathan before any of us ever convened together, is that I don't know if I would ever even accept anything other than us doing the right thing for everybody else. We're this far into it. It has been a very expensive venture, and that's not, and I believe in spending the money to get the right person. And it's concerning because if it's a Police Accountability Act and the intention is to improve policing, one of their most recent articles came out literally hanging the New Jersey State Police again because they are able to go in because it's a state agency and do what they do. So they didn't come out and saying, we've thought of new ways to make the state police better. They went in and made them look like villains. So if they take their own people and they're ready to skin them alive and hang them out to dry for public view, geez, imagine what they're going to try to do to everybody else.
Can I say one thing about your point on Governor Murphy? Because it's not what I said. You know, I don't intend to be a disparagement on Governor Murphy. What I want to make clear is
the administration generally. To be clear, we're not here to stomp on anybody. We're here to figure out how to assert our own rights and protect ourselves.
How about explain our position? We haven't had a fair opportunity to explain our position. There has been improper reporting done. So the beauty of today's internet and the exposure of this top 100 podcast and our platform that reaches over 1 million people daily, and our analytics of last year, we had 52 million views on our stuff. We're blowing everybody out of the water on a social media basis. This at least gives us an opportunity, one of the good things about the internet, to actually tell you the real story,
right,
and not have people sit around, and anybody who's a naysayer of this or maybe considers himself somebody who's an adversary of mine or doesn't like what we do, the very few minute people there are, because nobody makes something for everybody, and then take this opportunity to run or hurt others with it or prevent training or whatever it may be. And it also removes that, but it also restores faith in those who have stood side by side. I mean, from all the chiefs that reached out to me and said, we are going to be here for you. And we're anticipating a lot of support publicly because they know the truth. For 10, you can imagine 10 years in this state, if I was teaching anything wrong, I would have been shut down about the first 10 weeks, right? So 10 years, I'm allowed to teach at every police academy, essentially, in the state. Asked to keynote events, keynote the FOP event last summer. I mean, I'm all over the place. So if they're willing to do this to their own people, what are they willing to do to us? Or what are they planning to do to us? We are credible, and we need to restore faith that, because there has been concern, what is the investigation? We don't even know. We wish we could help you. And everybody I've talked to seems to believe, without pointing fingers or naming names, that this is one big political hit job. That's what's been told.
So what were you saying, Jonathan, about our context here publicly?
So as a lawyer, one of the arguments that we like to make, a slippery slope, or what are the long-term ramifications of this? Whatever you think of the current administration or the previous administration, the concern that I have as a lawyer is that if you have a state agency in the Office of the State Comptroller, where literally the head of it answers directly to the governor, and forget this governor for a moment, understand that the governor's office is elected right after an intense election in the state of New Jersey, frequently competitive elections. We tend to have Republican governors and Democrat governors. So the concern that I think courts should have and everyone should have is that if the office of the state comptroller can do whatever it wants and has no accountability to anyone and need not answer to it and can spend as much money as they want on it, even though their job is supposed to rein in spending on other people, right? That what's going to prevent some future administration from using them as a political weapon? It's the perfect political weapon, because any business in New Jersey that does accept a dollar of government money now becomes within the ambit of this mysterious investigative power of the state comptroller. What happens if you have another governor who wants to use it as a political tool to seek retribution against a political enemy, or is perceived to be doing so? There would be no limitation on them doing that, because you can't Oprah them, you can't get any information from them, you can't challenge them in court. So
they can look at any record of yours they want.
And if you don't give them the record, they can file a subpoena and try to hold you in contempt of court. If you do give them the record, they could recommend that you be debarred. You know, and they don't have to tell you why they looked for it. And then only once they go through it, they could figure out what's wrong with the records that they got and then say, oh, this is what we were looking for.
Pretty scary.
Can I just say one last thing? I mean, could you imagine a non-criminal investigation, political witch hunt, quote unquote, and the amount of money that's been spent, and it certainly is going to be in the six figures on behalf of the state. The taxpayer money has been used on this. The guy who's trying to help everybody. And with the rising crime rates, hunger, homelessness, opioid crisis. Why did we take hundreds of thousands of dollars and go after a guy who's a taxpayer, who's somebody who's helping people, who's a respected father, respected friend, and not allocate the hundreds of thousands of dollars we've done here into things that we actually needed? Because I got to tell you, we're not too far from Trenton. I bet you there's a few families in Trenton who could use a couple hundred grand and probably divide that up to feed their families. Why did we spend your taxpayer money on going after a guy like me, who, by the way, as long as I was given some kind of reassurance that I was not going to be hung out, put on a target, and shot in the head, would certainly open my doors and relinquish it and say, we've said it, let's cut the losses on both sides, let's have that conversation, and I will work with everybody. Why wouldn't you say, you know what, we're spending too much money here. Let's use these for something good. Let's use this money for something good. Let's push it onto something, you know, I don't know. How about, let's switch it back to the criminal side of it. I don't know, the thousands of drug dealers that are here, the cartels that are in this state, the human traffickers that are in this state. The United States of America is the number one country in the world for human trafficking. So we're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars going after Dennis Bonino in Street Cop Training, who is teaching guys how to intervene and stop criminal enterprise and human trafficking. And let's try to shut that down and give more protection to criminals and the victims of human trafficking, the victims of domestic violence, the victims of kids who are kidnapped and being exploited through the sex trade. Instead of teaching our cops with this money, even put it on police training to help us get to these people to rescue some children. Let's go after the only guy and the only company in the state who's actually stopping that stuff. It's wild. It's literally flabbergasting, and there can be only one agenda. And that's to say, politics, this is what we're doing. This is what we've done. And don't worry. These guys won't teach your cops anything here. You can assure. And people, listen, there are frustrations with the police. There are some people who are elated with their experience, some people who aren't. And we recognize that. We're taking accountability of it and saying, we're not just complaining that things need to get better. We're doing it. And now, because we're appeasing the agenda that you want to push, you're coming after us? I don't understand. Let's have an open forum. Let's have a discussion. And let's let cooler heads prevail and work together to make this better. Why is that so difficult? We want what you want, if that's what you actually want. Right. Is that what you actually want? Then work with us. We'll say that publicly. What's your response to that?
And if I could play Ron for a second and ask you a question. If back in March or May, if what they did, instead of actually demanding documents from you, if you got a phone call from Jane Schuster, and she said, hi, Mr. Bonino, I'd like to introduce myself. My name is Jane Schuster. I'm the head of the Police Accountability Project. I understand that you are the CEO of Street Cop Training. I'd like to talk to you about the programming that you have. Can you sit down with me and give me an hour or two of your time? Would you have talked to her?
To even solidify the answer to that before I do it is these investigators who came to my class from the Attorney General's office had said to me, would you work with us to make a program and just to conform, because the state police, a lot of people don't know, have different rules in their SOPs. They don't follow what everybody else has to follow. They've made it more strict through whatever courses of their history. They've put things in place to try to dissuade certain actions. And she said, to make it more compliant with the state police. And I said, I'd love to. She goes, just about 10% of it, we just have to dial these things in to make it compliant with the state police guidelines. And again, just to be clear, what the police officers in the municipalities do versus what the state police have to do are different, because the state police has put their own personal twist through the, through court orders from years ago, consent decree that came out of to prevent something they did that nobody who's even there now is responsible for. But they work in a tougher environment. They've essentially handcuffed them pretty much more than they have other police officers. And that entity is made up of some of the most wonderful, driven law enforcement officers. And the beauty about this state is we're all one big happy family, troopers, municipal, sheriffs. We all get along like you wouldn't believe. It's like we're family. So with that being said, I would have had Jane Schuster happily in here, just as happily as I was when I reported to everybody in this office how proud I was that we were finally going to get the state police to get the blessing to come in, and these guys would get the training that would keep them alive, and they would be able to recognize the signs of all these crimes, and even ones that kind of go up, these red flags, when somebody's looking to cause injury or danger to other people. You know, being that it's the times right now, there were two traffic stops that were made for the gentleman who murdered those four kids, or presumed to have murdered those four kids in Idaho. Those two police officers are trained from this company. That wasn't some BS guess on the road. That was a trained cop recognizing something was wrong. How did they go through two, what they call, quote unquote, these police officers that go out and try to stop crime on the highways? How did they get stopped out of the thousands and thousands and hundreds of thousands of cars that month? But they happened upon it, maybe the 25 or 30 or 50 traffic stops they did, come across a man who just committed four murders. This close to catching him, and they might have caught him on the way there if they had been out there, or more importantly, law enforcement officers received the training to recognize these criminals before they commit these acts. So could you imagine how elated I would be if the largest police training agency in the state of New Jersey received the training to prevent future homicides or catch criminals after they committed homicide? Because I can tell you what, I have at least 15 stories tied back to just my course out of the 40 plus we have now, where homicide suspects were arrested, sometimes right after the homicide, sometimes with the body in the trunk, sometimes a couple days or a couple weeks or a couple months after. And the reporting back is, I would have never found this. I would have never brought this person to justice. This victim's family would have never had any kind of comfort. There'd be no justice had I not taken this training. And it happened here in Manalpin for the first time on Route 33 westbound by a Manalpin Township police officer who took this class merely a few months earlier and resolved it. That man just last May, I believe it was, or August, received a life imprisonment for murdering a woman over a road rage incident heading eastbound into Freehold and fired one shot, shooting her in her head in front of her three-year-old and her boyfriend. She managed to pull over the side of the road, throw the car in park. He made a U-turn, and Chris McQuinsky was sitting there watching, and he recognized the things that he was taught. And he was the only person that was able to get that license plate later on, because 5 or 7 minutes later, tones came out saying a homicide had just occurred. And all they had was, maybe it looked like this car. And he said, I have the plate. And the next day, the Monmouth County Prosecutor's Office and the state police and whoever else was involved went to this gentleman's townhome in East Windsor, and he was brought to justice. So that victim's family has comfort now, as unfortunate as it is. But how many victims, because he was considered to be a serial shooter, look it up, how many victims were there not because of this training? Because one police officer intervened and saved your life. And that's the stuff that makes me just saddened by how, why are we trying to stop this?
So Jonathan, you've been on this a long time, and it looks like it could go on for a long time further from here. Ultimately, you've been practicing in New Jersey for a long time. You've been in front of the Supreme Court. You've been a very successful attorney. Give us your sort of, oh my God, I can't believe what's going on here, sort of moment here, which is the puzzling part of this for you is what?
I mean, it's like waking up in a Franz Kafka novel where you don't know why you're being pushed around and investigated and sent from one agency to another, and you have no clue. No one's giving you an explanation. That's not the way it works under the law. And I believe that it's just been the entire thing from the inception to the lower court decisions to the appellate division decision. And I'm hopeful now that when we get to the Supreme Court of New Jersey, that that's where the law is made. When the Supreme Court of New Jersey sits down and looks at it, I'm hopeful that the Supreme Court of New Jersey will say there's no way that an agency can operate the way that this agency has been permitted to operate. And, you know, I believe that, that's likely to happen. You know, obviously, legal minds can differ, but we're going to make that case. And I have confidence that we have a good chance of winning.
And Dennis, it's really elemental that everybody is, to your point earlier, is invested in making sure that policing is done as well as it possibly can be. And I think the ramifications of when it's done poorly and why police are just such an easy target is because when things go bad, they really go bad.
Right.
And the consequences are often devastating. But we have millions of law enforcement and enforcement officials in this country. And in terms of the percentage of times that things don't go well, it's a very low percentage. However, I think the commitment is that all of us have to say, we'd love it to be zero defect. We know we're human beings. It can't be zero defect. But you're working to make that as close to zero as possible. And God bless you. And where do you go from here?
I have survived this 10 years. I've grown this brand on one premise. It's not been my opinion. It has been my purpose to advocate the truth. Why I constantly win in conversation, debate, because I don't sit here and pontificate or project my personal opinions on anything. So I'm here to disclose the truth, and the theories are truthful. And it's not a narcissistic comment. I am also a firm believer in the U.S. Constitution. I teach and advocate for the Fourth Amendment. I believe in police officers not violating their rights and working within the constitutional limits of the Fourth Amendment. I don't want anybody having their rights violated. It's actually very embarrassing. And it just reminds me why my work is so important when I see a video where there's a clear flagrant violation of the law. And again, not out of malice. These guys and girls have been set up to fail. Knowing that we can make a difference, we have made a difference. And the more we do this, the more difference it's going to be. And the better it's going to be for this country, which I love and cherish tremendously. I know how fortunate I am to be a citizen of the United States of America. And you can look at the problems we have, but I got to tell you, I look at it the other way. What a wonderful place to be, and I'm a proud American. And knowing that I believe in the Constitution and what the forefathers wanted for us, I know that I have done nothing wrong. And whether or not a judge or a courtroom agrees with that, this is not some kind of delusional hypothesis that I come up with or have come up with. I know that we didn't do anything wrong. That's why I'm convicted on fighting this thing, because just like anybody else who's been wrongly accused,
right,
they have no qualms with going to trial. I am not interested in pleading unless it's for the right reasons or stopping this from moving forward. If this was a homicide trial and I was being accused of a murder I didn't commit, I would say, I know that I didn't do this. Let's go. There'd be no ifs, ands, or buts about it. So that's what I'm saying to Mr. Cohen today and to Ron Simoncini and everybody else here who are proud supporters and members of the law enforcement community and who support street cop training is, I haven't done a thing wrong. You all know I haven't. You all have complete faith in me. I have proven myself time and time again to never take political sides. I have one agenda to push, and that is to ensure what I've said earlier, the improvement of society through our way to improve police work. Because when you see police work as a whole, you understand how impactful it is on society. And to take the cops off the chopping block of the easy political pawns to point fingers at when 750,000 cops are represented by one or two or seven mistakes a year, and albeit big mistakes at times, and saying we paint them all with a broad brush. It's no different than saying, well, this Democrat or this Republican did this. That means every Democrat's like that. Every Republican's like that. We don't believe that. I have no interest in political siding. I have never come out formally and ever said anything bad, even in the wake of this, where one might think it's easy to go start taking political positions and trying to work with opposing parties. I have no interest in it because that is not the game that I am playing. I want to support those who support us. Knowing that I did nothing wrong, I will never stop fighting.
Well, thanks very much for having us here today. It's been thrilled to be in this presence of this audience, and I hope to see everybody again.
Guys, if you're in an area where you're trying to get to our classes, but we're not close to you, fret not. We actually have on-demand training at streetcop.com. You can take that course online right now, and then You could attend that training in the future at no additional cost. You can redeem your voucher. So you get two for the price of one. We don't want to deny you the ability to take this training now, especially knowing that it can keep you safe, at a very minimum, putting bad guys in jail where they belong, and at the maximum, going home to your family. Check out StreetCop.com for that offer.